Ciao! Here is a conversation with Marian Ghidea. Dr. Ghidea is a mathematician, focusing on the interplay between topology and dynamical systems theory, with a particular focus on symplectic geometry and Hamiltonian dynamical systems. He is professor of mathematics at Yeshiva University and program director at the National Science Foundation. We start talking about practical applications of his work in celestial mechanics in the context of the Lucy mission. We then get into the geometric properties of Hamiltonian systems, from the foliation of invariant tori in the phase space, coming from the Liouville-Arnold theorem, to the KAM theory and the role of resonances for the arising of irregular motion. We discuss Arnold diffusion in celestial mechanics, the stability of the solar system, and the presence of stochastic behavior in celestial mechanics, not necessarily related to the presence of underlying stochastic processes, therefore underlying the relation between chaos and stochasticity. We mention the fundamental problem of dynamics by Poincaré and his conjecture about the denseness of periodic orbits in the three-body problem. We then move into the use of topological and machine learning techniques to characterize critical transitions in climate and financial systems. We close on the use of the Melnikov method and on the dialogue between the analysis of complex systems and Hamiltonian ones. I hope you enjoy it. To support this project, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, connect with me on Twitter and LinkedIn, and support me on Patreon with a monthly membership, following the links in the description. So thank you for joining this conversation. I'd like to start, let's say, from the ground up, so from the practical applications of your work, and then going deeper into the theoretical aspects. And the first thing I'd like to ask you is the work you've conducted in joint work with the JPL from NASA, looking into trajectory design, because they were interested in looking at trajectories to Jupiter and the Jupiter system. And I don't know, what have you been looking into for that? Ballistic capture, invariant manifolds? What can you
tell us? Actually, this work started, was inspired by one of the NASA's mission, Lucy. So I think Lucy was launched just very recently. So it's a spacecraft that it's going towards Jupiter, and it's supposed to visit some of the Jupiter Trojans, some of the asteroids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with one of the PhD students at Yeshiva University, Waiting Lam, who, by the way, graduated in January 2021, we focused on one particular asteroid. Basically, we wanted to, we wanted to understand what are the possible trajectories, what is the dynamics in the vicinity of that asteroid. And what we wanted to take into account is the shape of the asteroid. Mm-hmm. So the asteroid is Hector, and it's one of the largest Trojan asteroids, and it has a strange shape. So it's like best approximated by a dumbbell shape.
Okay.
And because of that, the gravitational field is somewhat different from that of a spherical shape. And we are wondering what is the influence on the dynamics. So if a spacecraft were to go near such an asteroid, what kind of gravitational vector field we expect, and what kind of orbits are in the vicinity of such an asteroid. So we did not really consider space mission design as in going from Earth to Jupiter,
right,
to that asteroid, but we wanted to understand what is the influence of the shape on the dynamics near such an asteroid.
Mm-hmm. So, and for this, were you also looking into the gravitational attraction of the Sun and Jupiter? I mean, what was the model?
So it was a restricted four-body problem,
right,
in the sense that we consider the motion, the main bodies as Sun, Jupiter, and Hector.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are three bodies that have like larger masses. And the fourth body of infinitesimal mass would be the spacecraft.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was the model that we considered. But another motivation for looking at Hector is that Hector has a moon, a tiny moon.
Mm-hmm.
And this was discovered recently. So we can as well think of this moon as the fourth body.
Right.
And the moon was discovered relatively recently, and the motion of the moon is poorly understood because it's very difficult to observe it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that is asked is whether the motion of the moon is stable over the long term or not,
mm-hmm.
because it's close to some resonances, and it's quite possible that some instability will lead the motion of the moon to actually escape from Hector.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the second motivation for this work.
Right. Okay. You mentioned resonances, so maybe it's a good place to enter into Hamiltonian mechanics. And I don't know, maybe if you could, I don't know how to best introduce it, but maybe starting from the Liouville-Rayleigh theorem, action angle variables, and then what's the role of resonances there? I don't know, to a basic level, let's say.
Okay, so if you don't mind, I'll start with an even more basic level.
Yeah, sure. The more basic, the better.
So basically, Hamiltonian systems or Hamiltonian dynamics is concerned in mechanical systems that preserve the energy over the long run. Of course, this is like the simplest setup, and Hamiltonian formalism is to study the dynamics of the system via a translated into first order differential equations. And one thing that is noticed in many such Hamiltonian systems is that they have certain symmetries, and these symmetries lead to the appearance of nice geometric objects. So, for instance, you can have many periodic orbits, or you can have more general orbits like quasi-periodic orbits. So they are motions that are supported by invariant tori, donut shapes. Mm-hmm. And while they move around this tori, the trajectories do not close onto themselves, but they pass arbitrarily close to the starting point, and they do this many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
Besides such regular orbits, one can see chaotic orbits, irregular orbits. So one of the fascinating problems is that in typical Hamiltonian systems, you have coexistence of regular motions, of irregular motions. And people, starting from the time of Poincaré, they wanted to understand what is the interplay between these two types of dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And what you referred to earlier is one of the simplest cases of Hamiltonian systems, integrable Hamiltonian systems. So systems that you can actually solve, let's just say, by quadratures. Mm-hmm. And they have a very simple geometry. So I'm in my work, I'm really interested in the methods that come from geometry and topology. So I'm looking at what are the geometric objects that dictate, that act like as landmarks of the dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And if a system is integrable, then the geometry is very simple. So the whole space is filled by invariant tori, by donuts of some dimension. Mm-hmm. And the motion of each of these tori is very regular. So it's essentially a rotation by some frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So Well, there are some simple integrable systems that are encountered in nature, in physics, pendulae or harmonic oscillators or some mm-hmm. other type of oscillator like rotators. But when you start to couple such systems, they start to influence each other. And while the original motion of individual system can be regular, once you start to couple them, when they have influence between the system, the motion may cease to be integrable. And then you have this coexistence of regular motions mm-hmm. and irregular motions, chaotic ones.
Okay, and these resonances are associated to this chaotic motion.
So, yes, so resonances are, okay, so people try to understand how starting from regular motions, you have the birth of irregular ones. Mm-hmm. They happen near these resonances. So, well, let me say it in a geometric way. So, so imagine that you have a torus that, and you have some motion of such a torus. So it can be a quasi-periodic motion. So mm-hmm. Each trajectory is like moving on the torus, but never goes back to the original point. So you have an orbit that is dense; it fills mm-hmm. up the whole torus. So that is one case. But it's also possible to have that the torus is filled by individual periodic orbits. Mm-hmm. So that would be like a resonant torus.
Right.
So the non-resonant ones, the ones that are filled by trajectories that fill out densely the torus, are the ones that are surviving a perturbation. So essentially the coupling, so if I start to take this motion and perturb it by something, adding another system. This type of non-resonant motion will survive. So this tori may survive, although being likely deformed. So this is what is the so-called KAM theory, mm-hmm. Kolmogorov-Arnold-Moser. While the resonant tori are the ones that are filled by periodic orbits are typically going to be destroyed, and they give rise to chaotic motions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this is also related then, is this equivalent to saying that to the arising of the Arnold web, or is there something, is there some more assumption to say to arrive at that?
Yes, I think you are spot on. So, the geometric structures that are coming out from these resonances are somewhat complicated, but they are the ones that drive irregular motions on the long run. So they look like a web, and this web is created by such resonances in some high dimensional space, and there are chaotic irregular trajectories that can sort of follow this web. And not only that they are irregular, but they can also travel a long distance in the phase space. Mm-hmm. They may start maybe close to one of these tori where the motion it's regular, but in the long run, such motions can move very far from the original motion. They become completely chaotic, and they can fill out a large region of the space. Mm-hmm. And I emphasize that this can be a very, very slow process.
Mm-hmm. And are there places in which we are detecting it, like in celestial mechanics?
So what I was trying to describe before, inspired by your questions, the so-called general problem of Arnold diffusion. Mm-hmm. So Arnold diffusion says that if you start with an integrable system, a system in which the motion is fairly regular, supported by quasi-periodic motion on tori, and if you apply a small perturbation to this, then not only that you have the coexistence between regular motion and chaotic ones, but moreover, you are going to have some trajectories that are going to travel very far.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Arnold diffusion in a nutshell. And now you ask me a very interesting question, whether this has been observed in celestial mechanics. And the answer is maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to refer to some works. So there is a work by one of my colleagues at Yeshiva University, Pablo Roldan, together with his collaborators Vadim Kaloshin, Marcel Guardia, and Jacques Pejols. They look at the main asteroid belt.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the asteroids between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And when astronomers look at the main asteroid belt, they observe that there are some gaps in the geometry of this belt of asteroids. So these are the Kirkwood gaps. And they happen at certain resonances corresponding to the relative motion of these asteroids in terms with respect to the orbit of Jupiter. And so basically you have a belt, like a ring of asteroids, and but there are some regions where there are no asteroids. And they try to use this Arnold diffusion to explain why asteroids happen not to be there in those particular places. And they use geometrical arguments that I sort of mentioned mm-hmm. before, that if an asteroid happens to be at a resonance, the motion is likely to become irregular, then the asteroid is going to be pushed away from that region and it's going to move to a different region.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like a possible explanation for these Kirkwood gaps based on a simple model.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that people in astrodynamics, that they look at the formation of the solar system and maybe many other effects that come into play.
Mm-hmm.
So while the Arnold diffusion is a possible explanation of this, it's not so easy to argue that this is the only mechanism that leads to the
right.
So they can be competing mechanisms, and all of them, they contribute to the creation of mm-hmm. the Kirkwood gaps.
Right. And could something be said, thinking about the same topological ideas, I mean, Hamiltonian dynamics ideas, about the stability of the solar system itself? I've been reading some works by Jacques Lascar, looking into basically stating that the solar system is not it's not regular, but it's chaotic, and it quantifies a certain Lyapunov function, Lyapunov indicator, to characterize the time it will take for the solar system to start being irregular. Is this related to what you were saying now?
Yes. So I think. So Jacques Lascar is famous for a long-term numerical simulation of the solar system, and his experiments are very well thought, and they rely on deep mathematics. And he observed that in the long run one has instability. I think the mechanism of instability are the ones that are similar to Arnold diffusion, but at the end of the day they are much more complex, because while Arnold diffusion is concerned particularly with system close to integrable, then the solar system it's sort of difficult to approximate with an integrable system, or maybe the approximation is not so great. And then it's, I think Lascar himself doesn't want to associate the Arnold diffusion mechanism with what he observed, but of course there are similarities. On the other hand, there are also works by theoretical works by Jacques Fejols, who followed up on the old problem of Arnold, and he said that the solar system is stable in the KM sense. What does it mean? That you have some initial conditions for which you have KM type of stability. So if you happen to have the initial condition in some particular places, then you are going to have long-term stability. But this is the theoretical result. So the solar system is not the solar system that we know, but a simplified solar system, some simplified assumption, for instance, on the masses of the planets. And also that you don't really have, you cannot start with realistic assumption on the initial conditions, but you start with a very special initial condition that make the theory apply. I think it's wonderful that there are theoretical results in one place and very serious numerical results at the other end of the spectrum, but somewhere in between there is a gap.
So it's an open question. I mean, it's an open question.
I would say so. We, in a work with one of my collaborators, Maciej Kapiński, from Krakow, we made an attempt to cover this gap between, let's say, theoretical results that are very restrictive in terms of what mass parameters you should assume, what initial conditions you are allowed to choose, and more realistic systems. So we chose a particular system, Neptune Triton. Triton has a highest eccentricity of an orbit in the solar system. So Triton is a moon of Neptune, but it has very large eccentricity. So we studied what is the possible effect on some infinitesimal object. Like, let's say you take another asteroid, it moves under the influence of Neptune and Triton, and we wanted to see what is the effect of the Arnold diffusion. So we consider realistic parameters, and we used theoretical and computer-assisted tools to investigate the Arnold diffusion problem. And we proved Arnold diffusion for such system, and we also had some estimates of what would be the effects on such an asteroid. And the effects are, let's just say, quite visible.
But yeah, you were saying about the idea of using considering the eccentricity.
Yes, so I was saying that we looked at the Neptune-Triton system, and Triton is a moon of Neptune, and it has a very large eccentricity. And we looked at what would be the long-term effect of the eccentricity of Triton on a third object, for instance, a small asteroid that is in the vicinity of these two. And we did a computer-assisted proof to show that you have Arnold diffusion, and it's actually the time scale of Arnold diffusion is not so long, so the effects are, let's just say, can be observed for such a system.
Right.
But of course, this is a simplified system because we sort of neglect the the sun and the other planets. So we only looked at Neptune, Triton, and a small asteroid.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of the Arnold diffusion in Kirkwood gaps is different because there that phenomenon can arise also because even if the eccentricity of Jupiter is zero, while here you're dealing with a different dynamical system.
I think now they also consider the effect of the eccentricity of Jupiter, as far as I remember.
Okay. Right. And so everything we set up tonight is in a deterministic framework, right?
Yes.
Do you think it makes sense to introduce stochastic? Because I mean, the title of the paper you mentioned is stochastic behavior. You say this to characterize the motion of the asteroid, let's say, of the particle, or because there's some underlying stochasticity in the system?
So what we wanted to the question that we wanted to address is like what would be the typical motion of such an asteroid. So Arnold diffusion is there exist some initial conditions that make the small body, the asteroid, travel a large distance. But these motions are not necessarily typical. And in fact, they can be very special. So they happen for a tiny, tiny set of initial conditions. So we sort of wanted to ask what happens with the typical initial conditions. So the trajectory is likely going to follow something like a stochastic process.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to describe what is the stochastic process that a typical orbit will undergo through. So that's why we have this stochastic process in the title of the paper. So what we observed is that what we show is you have some set of initial conditions for which the trajectory will behave like a Brownian motion with a drift.
Mm-hmm.
So the motion, it's the system, it's purely deterministic, but the typical motion for typical initial condition looks like a Brownian motion over the long run.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is, I've been looking a lot into this. The similarities between chaotic motion and stochastic processes that one can view. I mean, for example, the fact that the spectrum of a chaotic dynamical system is continuous. So basically you cannot distinguish a stochastic process from one realization of stochastic process from a chaotic behavior. And so basically you're saying this, and it's different from saying that the underlying dynamics is chaotic itself, right?
I think it's very similar to what you just said. Mm-hmm. So the chaotic motion is very similar to a random motion. So this is what we were able to figure out, prove actually. through these computer-assisted methods. And indeed, we looked at statistical tools to look at the distribution of the orbit over the long time and how this distribution evolved. So.
Interesting. Okay. And can we go back? I mean, not back, we're always talking about the same ideas, but before you mentioned the foliation of tori, I mean, the fact that in well-behaving systems, you have this this denseness of geometric objects, or also you said that something related to ergodic theory, I think, that the orbits are covering all the torus, something like that. I've been looking into, recently I discovered this Poincaré conjecture, which is not the one from the Millennium problems about the, I don't know, I think it's related to topology as well, but it's one about basically in the restricted three-body problem. I don't know if you're aware of it. I guess so.
So tell me.
Poincaré stated that if a particular solution of the restricted problem, the three-body, is given, one can always find a periodic solution such that the difference between these two solutions is as small as desired for any given length of time. So basically the denseness of periodic solutions in the three-body problem.
Yes, so I think you're absolutely correct that this is a very challenging question. So as far as I know, there is a lot of, let's say, effort trying to answer this question in some context or another, but I think it's a long way to go. So,
okay. And can topological tools be helpful? I mean, is your work in some way aiming at that direction?
Personally, I don't see much hope. I mean, topological tools are, the way I use these topological tools are, let's say, good to find a periodic orbit at a time, but, and you have maybe not so much control of the orbit. You find this orbit with some error, but to prove that every trajectory can be approximated by a periodic orbit, I think this will require a quantum leap in our mathematical methodologies. So,
what do you mean by discontinuity?
So developing new theories, for instance.
Not that we should use quantum formalism.
No.
Okay.
I think some quantum leap in our progress.
Okay. And in this, is this also related to the fundamental problem of dynamics? I think Poincaré it's himself stated this.
I think the fundamental problem of dynamics formulated by Poincaré, the way I understand it, is that you start with an integrable Hamiltonian system, a system for which the motion is very regular, and add a small perturbation, add a small effect. And the general question is to understand what happens, what kind of possible motions.
So it's everything, I mean, the KM theory is inside all this framework.
Yeah, KM theory is inside, Arnold diffusion is inside. But I think he was wondering what is, let's say, the general behavior. So, what are the possible scenarios?
Right.
I think we are just scratching the surface of this very big question.
Nice. Okay, before we close, I'd like to move to another interesting topic. I mean, it's funny to see someone interested in celestial mechanics and finance. I think it's a nice combination. I mean, I really see a lot of parallels. I enjoy reading both things. And I knew you from celestial mechanics. And then by looking at, techniques for, understanding financial behaviors, your name popped up again, and I said, wow, okay. So I'm not crazy to think there are parallel between the two fields. So yeah, you use topological techniques to characterize the evolution, to basically predict some qualitative behavior of financial systems. Are these related to what we have discussed up to now, or if not, what are they about?
So I would say that there is some relation, not directly with celestial mechanics, but with stability and instability in dynamical systems. So I think when before I start to look at the financial time series, I was interested in deterministic systems that undergo bifurcations, mm-hmm. and what happens if you add noise to these deterministic systems. And then it's sort of difficult to rigorously define what means a bifurcation in a noisy system. But the question that you can ask is, people use the terminology of a tipping point or a critical transition when the state of the system makes an abrupt change, mm-hmm. sudden change. It's unexpected and it's very dramatic. So some of these original questions were posed in the context of climate change. So mm-hmm. the concern is whether the climate change will eventually lead to a change in the temperature and weather that it's very dramatic and it's very hard to revert back, even if you start to take measures at the global scale. But that was the initial motivation. But at the end of the day, if you just frame it into a mathematical context, so you have a regular motion, maybe around an attractor, mm-hmm. and the motion becomes closer and closer to instability, and you add noise, and the effect of the noise is that the instability becomes more prominent. So the system is more likely to jump to a different state even before the theoretical value given by the bifurcation. So in fact, I'm currently looking right now at this type of model with a colleague of mine, Pablo Roldan, and also with a student, Elishiva Siegfried. So to sort of find a theoretical framework for what is called early warning signs. So people want to see, okay, can you detect these critical transitions before they actually happen from the data? Mm-hmm. So this is where topological data analysis comes into play. So so you don't know the model is in a black box, and you only see the output of the system, which is a time series. So whether it's temperature or carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, or if you look at the financial system, whether it's stock price or index prices and so on. So you look at the time series and you want to see whether there is a change in the distribution of the values that is a predictor for a bifurcation of a critical transition. So the idea is that you can perhaps describe this time series as a point cloud in some high dimensional space. So just a bunch of points in some high dimensional space. And of course you can say, why not use statistical methods? Statistical methods are a good candidate to find changes in the distribution of the point clouds, but we choose to use topological tools. So we want to associate to such point clouds some topological invariants that come from algebraic topology. And the idea is, before a critical transition, we start to see that these point clouds are changing their shape. So how do they change the shape? So I think it's a little bit difficult to explain. So they are fairly complex, these point clouds. So you are essentially looking for gaps in these point clouds. And how do these gaps appear? So they can appear in different ways. So maybe the underlying distribution changes. So for instance, you move from a unimodal distribution to a multimodal distribution. So then the points in the point cloud are more concentrated in some places and less concentrated in some other places. So that's how you have some gaps in the data. Or is the variance of the point clouds that changes? So that means in the periphery of these point clouds, you start to have or holes in the data. So there are several mechanisms that can lead to changes in the shape of the point cloud. And using topological methods, you can actually measure these changes. And we apply this to financial crisis. With my collaborators, Yuri Katz from Standard & Poor's, and later on with Yuri Katz and Pablo Roldan, whom I mentioned before, and with some graduate students, Daniel Goldsmith and Jonas Mello. So we looked at first at the financial crashes from year 2000, the dot-com, and 2008, the housing bubble. And we were able to detect such changes in the financial data. And later on, we looked at the cryptocurrency crash. When was it? 2018. It was the Bitcoin market crash. And we were able to find that, well, there are early signs of such critical transitions.
Right.
So to go back to your question, so it's still the question, the interplay between stability and instability, between regular motion and irregular motion in a dynamical system. But this time, the noise is not an outcome of the system, but it's part of the input. So financial time series or data that comes from climate are very noisy intrinsically. And we use these topological tools to sort of get a overall picture of the data set and how is it changing over time.
Nice. And do you think these techniques can be applied back to the climate, for example? Because I mean, also let me say that this is sounds really related to complex systems theory, the topics that won the physics Nobel Prize this year. Yeah, because for example, I was looking into a paper by Giorgio Parisi and others, looking into climate and the present of the effect of random perturbations that gave rise to stochastic resonances, in which you jump. I guess that's the same idea. Critical transition is the same. Is it a synonym?
Yes, that is very correct. And actually, we do have a paper. So the paper is not very popular, but it's there. So it's specifically on applying these topological data analysis methods plus the machine learning tools to study climate data. Right. So we used real data from ice cores to, so it was like data from the very distant past to see whether you can use these tools that I mentioned before as early predictors of climate change.
Okay, so you applied specifically to climate change.
Yes, I mean, not for the future climate. We didn't try to make predictions what will happen with the future, but we looked at the past as a, let's say, as a learning tool.
Okay. And do you think then something can go back, let's say, to more simple systems like this Lessing mechanics one? Some of these ideas can then inform back, the space community about. I don't know, it sounds a lot like the passage from to the geometric viewpoint of Poincaré to characterize qualitatively the motion. And then there's an additional jump to an even more qualitative description. Do you think this then can be applied to?
I think there is hope. So, so let me try to address a possible simpler question. So when you consider a relatively simple system like celestial mechanics and add perturbations, so the perturbations can be very general, but for instance they can be quasi-periodic perturbations. So quasi-periodic perturbation means that to your original system, you add the perturbation that have many independent frequencies, like a trigonometric type of perturbation, but the different turns in the perturbation have different frequencies that are incommensurable. And this is a technique that I've been studying with some of my collaborators, for instance, with Rafael del Sams, Amadeo del Sams, Rafael de la Llave, Teresara, Pablo Roldán. And I think we have a pretty solid foundation to understand the effect of such perturbations. I'm also working with a student now, Samuel Akinbade, of studying such perturbations that are not necessarily conservative, but we allow dissipation into the system.
Okay.
And what I wanted to say, so I sort of gave you maybe too much information. So quasi-periodic perturbation, if you put many frequencies, they are also very similar to random perturbations. So when sometimes when people want to study the effect of random perturbations, if they want to start with a simpler problem, they say, okay, let's consider a quasi-periodic perturbation in which you have, for some reason, four different frequencies. So apparently, four is a magic number that gives you, that mimics random perturbations. So I don't think we are yet at the level of giving a definitive answer to the effect of random perturbations, but we understand very well quasi-periodic perturbations with many things. Let me, if I can mention a collaborator from Italy, it's Anna Maria Cherubini. So we are working on a project of studying precisely the effect of random perturbations, but not on celestial mechanics, in simpler mechanical systems like rotators and penduli coupled plus small perturbations added, small random perturbations added in the system.
Interesting. And I saw you have a number of works on the application of the Melnikov method, Melnikov theory. Is this used in this context or?
Yes, we use it in this context. So, so going back to the first question that you asked about how regular motions lead to irregular motions. And once you add the perturbation, so one of the standard recipes to obtain chaos is to have like stable and unstable manifolds that start to intersect transversally. So what happens is that maybe you have a simpler system in which you have stable and unstable manifolds of, I don't know, periodic orbit, a torus of a quasi-periodic orbit that they coincide, they do not intersect transversally, which doesn't give you chaos. But then you say, now I'm going to add the perturbation. Maybe this perturbation will help me to find these geometric structures, like stable and unstable manifold that have transverse intersection. Once you have transverse intersection, you have like a Smale's horseshoe and you have chaos. So Mernikov theory is one of these tools that allows you to start with an unperturbed system where you do not have the horseshoe, but you have some ingredients, and then conclude based on computations, on explicit computation, whether the effect of the perturbation will lead to Smale's horseshoe, and therefore to chaos.
Right.
It's a very practical tool.
Mm-hmm.
Has been used for a long time. I've been also using it with my collaborators, including with my student Samuel Akinbade, with Anna Maria Cherubini, who's a professor at the University of Salento.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
That's the how these things come together.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my work. So.
Yes, yes. No, I think, I mean, at least I see a nice picture, an organic picture. Now it's clear to me why the interest for finance and celestial mechanics, and I mean, Hamiltonian dynamical systems. So I hope that was clear to all the listeners. And I think we can close it here. So I thank you a lot for your availability today and the and for your work. I mean, it's amazing to see
many
insights in one person. So. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your interest and thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts.